Welcome back to Podcast Recovery, everyone. I am your host.
A little bit.
Yeah, David.
Go ahead. Keep going.
I'm your host, David O, with my co-host slash producer,
Eric.
Just Eric. All right, we're just Eric today. The wizard, the man behind the curtain. And today we're joined by our very special guest, Valerie. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. You know, the weather kind of sucks. Even though we had like such a good
week.
It
looks really pretty outside. What do you mean?
Dude, it's cold and rainy. It's poopy. It was such a good week. Where are you from?
I'm from Baltimore County, Perry Hall, Maryland.
Whoa, okay. Perry Hall?
Yeah.
Did you go to Perry Hall?
No, I went to Catholic High.
You're Catholic.
I went with all the Perry Hall kids.
Are you a recovering Catholic?
Absolutely. My sponsor says that. She's like, I'm a recovering Catholic.
So many. We should have a recovery. We should have a Catholic recovery episode.
Fucked over by guilt, like, and shame. Like, and you're like, oh, I'm so guilty and shameful of every fucking thing. Like, it's like, get over yourself. Jesus.
You were born with original sin and all that stuff.
But give it like four Hail Marys and like, fucking, and everything's
yeah,
good.
Domini, you're good. Okay. When were you first introduced to recovery?
I was first introduced to recovery. I was 18, introduced by my stepdad, who at the time I think had around 10 years sober.
Okay.
I wasn't interested at all.
No.
But yeah, introduced at 18.
And how long have you been clean?
3.5 years.
Fantastic. All right. With all that out of the way, I'm going to turn it over to you to share your story with us, so take it away.
All right. Sounds good. So I'm Valerie. Mm-hmm. Like you already asked, from Perry Hall, Baltimore County. Growing up was, there was nothing traumatic that happened, nothing, that, jumps out at me that I could be like, oh, like, well, that's why I'm an addict. Like, that's why I did what I did. But there were, certain things as far, like, on the inside that I can point out for sure, as far as, like, you kind of hear it sometimes about, like, never feeling okay in your own skin, mm-hmm. or never, that's exactly how I felt. Mm-hmm. I got bullied a lot in elementary, middle school.
Why?
They said I was stupid and I had eczema. So they made fun
that's
of my eczema.
So mean.
That is something some kids would make fun of, though. I
mean, yeah.
Kids are ruthless.
Kids are really fucking.
What's up, flaky? Yeah. Fuck you.
Literally.
That's fucked up.
Yeah, but, yeah, and then, I was introduced to drugs and alcohol and weed when I was 13. And I'm the type where I sat, like, I remember exactly where I was. Mm-hmm. I remember exactly who I was with. I remember what we were drinking, how we were smoking. Like, I remember all of it.
That brings me to my first, or many, of many interjections. What was your first drink? We ask a lot of people.
It was this... my friend Carly and I stole her grandmother's port wine.
Oh my god. At 13?
Yeah.
Drinking a fine port? That's not bad. In the scale of things, that's not bad.
She was pretty pissed off.
I'm sure.
But so we did that, and then and I felt like I could breathe. Mm-hmm. I felt like I could breathe. Like, I came up from water and, like, I could actually breathe. And I didn't think, about what I thought you were thinking about me. I didn't mm-hmm. think about, how insecure I felt in my own skin. Like, I didn't think of any of that. And it was just refreshing. And I chased that immediately.
Yeah.
And then conveniently around the same time, my dad was building a bar in the basement.
Of course. Yep.
Which is like pretty much all water at this point.
What was your first drink, Eric? I forgot.
I mean, it was like some shitty vodka and like Natty Light.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Something great.
That tracks.
Yeah. It was like a $5 fifth of vodka. And we drank it in the Bloomsbury parking lot for like a dance.
God, I love you sometimes. Yeah. All right. So your dad's building a bar.
Yes. Also around the same time, my parents are getting divorced, which was very difficult. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like crazy ugly, but it wasn't pretty. And I justified it like, oh, well, my, everybody's parents are divorced. Like, it's fine. Like, it's not a big deal. You know what I mean?
We were really the first generation where it started to become like, okay.
Like normal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just completely normal. And like, So I kind of like downplayed it. And I was like, yeah. Oh, you know, it's fine watching your family, you know, fall apart right in front of your eyes.
Oh, yeah. Whatever. Of course.
And then, you know, a big part of my story is struggling with an eating disorder. So, like, that's kind of a way. That was also a way for me to kind of like get outside myself and be able to like control things when everything around me was kind of going nuts. You know what I mean? I couldn't control what was happening. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I had a really poor relationship with my mother. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, blamed it on her, whatever, whatever.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, you know, that was happening. Kind of all happened at once.
Yep.
And then I just kind of went, you know, it was fun. It was fun for a little
bit. Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? Of course. And like, that's the thing, people who are like, oh, it was never fun. I mean, dude, it was fun at some point.
Right.
Like,
why would you keep doing it?
Why would you keep doing it if you didn't even have the illusion of fun?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it you know, it was fun for a little bit, and, you know, you do, like, the fun, like, high school stuff, right? But then, like, it didn't stop for
yeah,
me. You know
of course.
I mean? And then it just, like, didn't. It wasn't fun anymore.
Yeah.
After... I don't know. I mean, I did well in high school. I got honors. I don't know how I did that. Mm. And then, you know, I went to CCBC and I couldn't finish a semester because I was in and out of Shepherd Pratt Mental Health Institution. So, you know, mental health and you know, drugs and alcohol, they're just a huge...
Oh, yeah.
They just go, you know, it's like back and forth.
Yeah.
You know.
One begets the other.
Yeah. So I really struggled with that for a while. You know, I was sitting out for a few years, and then...
was it depression?
I am bipolar 1 in a rapid cycle.
Ooh.
And that is something that has been, excuse me, so difficult to navigate as far as, like, you know, people say, like, oh, like, well, you know, do this, and this, mm-hmm. and you feel better. And then I'm like, you know, I do that, and I'm like, well, why am I not feeling better? Like, I didn't fully understand what was recovery, like, what I could do in recovery to, like, help myself, as opposed to, like, how much outside help I actually needed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? At that time. So that was difficult. And then when I was 19, went to treatment, you know, rehab for the first time. And there was one thing, I don't remember anything about that day,
mm-hmm.
except for one thing. Well, I'm sorry, two things. I remember the very first hug that I got. It was mm-hmm. this guy, Reggie. I just walked in the building and, you know, I was like, in and out of blackout, like barely, you know, and so I walk in and I just remember this random stranger who's a client, and he hugs me and he just embraces me, no pat on the back, no, like, you know, rub, whatever, just like holds me,
mm-hmm.
and I felt so safe in that moment. And then the second thing I remember is another also another client, you know, came outside. She was like, hey, let's go outside, and she looked at me and she was like, I was like, what am I going to do for my wedding? What am I going to do, you know, for my 21st birthday? I was 19.
Oh, okay.
So, you know,
I was like, were you getting married? Oh, my God.
What am I going to do when I get married? Like,
yeah.
And she's like, well, you don't have to worry about that. And also, you're 19, so you're not 21. You don't have to worry about that either.
Yeah.
But she was like, why don't you just try it? Like, and that was the best thing that anybody could have said to me at that point in time. Just try it.
Mm-hmm.
She was like, the liquor stores are always going to be there. Drug dealers are always going to be there. You know what I mean? Try it for like 90 days and see what happens. Do everything.
What brought you to rehab?
An intervention.
An intervention?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh, backpedal.
Yeah.
Rewind. Rewind.
So
we're drinking port wine. We're smoking weed. We need some middle ground here.
So from that point, I went to treatment for Xanax and alcohol. And, I stayed the night at my dad's. I don't remember for what reason, but I stayed the night at my dad's, and you know, the next morning I woke up and my mom, my dad, my aunt, cousin, and two uncles are all downstairs.
Wow.
And they had called my uncle because, you know, at the time he was 20 to 21 years sober.
Okay.
And he, you know, friends with, you know. So they called him, they had a little intervention, they were like, hey, you're going to treatment. And I was like, fuck you, no, I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
And then at that point, they were like, okay, well, treatment or homeless. And I was like, all right, well, I don't really, like, want to be homeless. So
well, treatment sounds, it sounds okay, actually.
It sounds fine now. Yeah. And then I ended up staying clean for a little over 2 years. In that time, I didn't do anything except go to meetings.
Mm-hmm.
I made a man my higher power, and I...
Of course.
Yeah, I just like ran with that, right? And then, you know, when my, you know, quote unquote higher power is gone, then I don't know what to do with myself because I didn't work on anything and I didn't build a foundation. Yeah.
I've said it a million times, men are the worst drug. They're the worst.
I mean, I agree with you.
Yeah.
I do. That's a part of my story too.
You know,
struggling with that type of stuff. So, you know, after, I don't know. After that, I mean, a lot of my story, like, you know, after 19, going to my first treatment center, a lot of my story is literally just back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
But it gets worse every single time.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm never going to do heroin. Did heroin.
Mm-hmm.
I'm never going to shoot heroin. Shot heroin.
Mm-hmm.
Never going to smoke crack. Smoked crack. Like, just the whole progression. What I used, how I used, and what I did to get what I needed all got worse. And, you know, when I was 19, introduced to this program, I didn't believe that. I was like, it's not progressive. Like, it's totally fine, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of just like an in and out thing. And in that time, I realized more of how sick I was when I was clean than when I was using.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I realized how sick I was when I was clean.
Yeah.
Because I realized that it's not the drugs and the alcohol for me.
You
know what I mean? Like, it's not that. It's like me and my brain and what...
it's
what
a bummer,
I do
man.
To feel better. Yeah. So that was like kind of a big realization for me. You know, a few years into it, I was like, oh shit, like I'm like really sick.
Yeah.
You know? So kind of, I mean, I don't know, like I said, like the big, you know, back and forth type of thing. And I mean, recently these past, you know, 3.5 years, you know, before you had mentioned that, like, you know, my sobriety date, March 27th, 2020 is the, you know, beginning of the pandemic pretty much. And that was really difficult. You know, I went to treatment, I got out and went to meetings for 2 weeks. And then
the world shut down.
All of a sudden, all of a sudden everything just shut down. And I was like, oh my gosh, what do I do? And I picked up a drink. And the last time I drank, it was just drinking, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing bad happened. There was no car accident, no DUI, nothing like crazy. Nothing bad happened. I just remember sitting on a couch in and out of blackout with a bunch of random people around me. And I'm like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
Like, what am I doing? Like, I can't do this anymore. Like, this is just, it's exhausting.
Oh, yeah.
So I remember the next day, like, you know, I haven't, you know, drank a drug since. And if it weren't for the people, you know what I mean, that I had met and the somewhat of a foundation or like network that I built, you know, years prior to this pandemic and getting, you know, clean again.
How many years did you have before that?
Before I relapsed that time, I had a year. So I've celebrated 3 1-years, 2 2-years, and 1 3-year.
Okay.
Wait. 3 1-year, two 2 years?
Yeah.
And then one year?
Or three 3 years.
1 3-year.
That's a perfect pyramid.
I'm trying to think.
That's 3 2 1. That's a perfect pyramid. There you go.
Yeah.
You're cured. You achieved it. You achieved it. You are 100% cured.
I am cured.
Oh, it sucks funny. Celebrating 1 2 times.
I've celebrated 1 1. That's, dude, I'm not fucking. That's not a bragging. Like, it's just, it is what it is.
I know.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's also like crazy because, like, sometimes people look at me and they're like, oh, wow, cool. You celebrated so many anniversaries. And I'm like, well, no, like, I say it because, like, not everybody gets a chance to even come in here once.
Yeah.
Not everybody even knows what this program is or gets a chance to go to rehab to make the decision to change their life or, like, work on shit, you know?
Yeah.
And for some reason, I don't know what reason that is, but, like, I was given multiple chances, and, like, I'm not willing to screw that up again.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm not willing to take that chance of, like, oh, maybe I can drink. Maybe I can. I don't know. But, like, I'm not willing to find out because, like, it's gone to shit every single time after that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, you know, before, you know, like I said, the in and out thing. I've been sober more than I haven't in the past 7.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is a blessing. And like this last time,
I honestly didn't know about your relapses. I thought you'd just been clean this whole time. Really? Yeah. Yeah. Nope. No idea.
No. Yeah. Yeah. It's been interesting. It's like I get this delusion that like, mm-hmm. oh, I can just drink. Mm-hmm. When have I ever been able to just drink? Okay? Yeah. Never.
Yep.
You know?
Is that your type one though? Is that a little bit of the bipolar one kind of coming and creeping in? Like, are you like fully medicated during those times, or is it, you know, do you just kind of, because like if you're not medicated, if you're type one, like shit goes awry pretty quick.
Yes it does. Yeah. So throughout that time, so actually after probably a year into being sober the first time, you know, like around 20-ish, mm-hmm. I was like, you know, exhibiting all these symptoms and acting on these behaviors and all that stuff. So, you know, when I went to my psychiatrist, you know, they were talking, and that's when I was diagnosed, and it had been going on for a while, but
yeah.
And that runs in my family also. So, so I was medicated for large parts of being, you know, sober, but...
Were you on lithium?
I am currently on lithium. Okay. Yeah. So that, I got on that like four-ish years ago. That was literally right... I got on that right before I... right before my last treatment center.
Mm-hmm.
And that helped. That helped. That helped me like a lot for at the beginning. And I'm still on it, and it still, you know, helps. I'm actually like kind of in the midst right now of navigating some med management and all that stuff that's surrounding this. Same. Because like sober or not, like I struggle. And honestly, like full transparency, like I've been struggling immensely with the bipolar because you know, sometimes you're on meds for a certain period of time,
yep.
work, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And like I was saying before, like what is me in recovery? Like what can I do in my recovery versus like what do I need outside help with?
Mm-hmm.
Has been like kind of the main theme this past year, honestly.
Yeah.
And you know, struggling with certain things and you know, stress can be a trigger for like, you know, manic episodes, stuff like that, right? So like I, you know, will either sleep for 16 hours or I will stay awake for 2 days, right? And I'm completely sober. And you know, maybe not that long ago, I was in the crisis center, and it's because like I asked for help, right? Like I don't want that, you know, I only say that because like to reiterate the fact that like it's okay to ask for help. Mm-hmm. In sobriety, like it's okay to ask.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's vital.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that was helpful. And that, you know, I have a lot of people in my life that help me, you know, and that are very supportive.
Mm-hmm. Because one thing I think that like gets lost a lot of the times, because like we're so focused on, you know, recovering from drugs and alcohol or whatever, that a lot of times like the mental health mm-hmm. stuff goes under the radar. Like I've known people who have killed themselves in recovery because that's not addressed, and like people are like, oh, it's an outside issue. I'm like, no, it's fucking not.
That's what you have a sponsor for.
Yeah. And it's like, dude, like this shit needs to be talked about. Right. Absolutely. Like it is part of the equation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like when you're so focused on one thing, like that can come out of nowhere, and mm-hmm. you know, mental health can kill you too.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I always like, you know, when I share an anniversary where I shouldn't, you know, speak at a meeting or anything like that, or like talk to sponsees or like anybody mm-hmm. else, like I, you know, make it a point to like talk about stuff like that because like it is a huge issue, and I don't think it's talked about enough.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. We definitely have some questions for you. Eric, would you like to go first?
Sure.
All right.
I can do this one first. I was just so astonished, you know, with like the benzos last. I'm just, like still like, holy fuck, man, are you alive? Yeah. All right, bipolar, type one. I've been diagnosed with two. multiple times, and I definitely feel for you for having won. That's awful. I think something, I was talking to my like new psychiatrist the other day, and she was saying, you know, like I've kind of been in remission, I guess, from mental illness for a while with certain aspects of it, and like I kind of, I guess, relapsed or whatever. And like how, I guess, like I saw how that was like fucking up my relationships. Like, how does like the bipolar affect your relationships with like your friends and family? Because like the drugs are like one aspect, but like the chemical imbalance is something completely different.
So it's, I feel like for me it's kind of similar to how the drugs and alcohol affect my relationships, as far as like
it's similar, but I mean maybe it's not like, yeah, they're similar, right? Like I can attest to that from last week and how they treated me like I was a drug addict, but like
I treat you like you're a drug addict all the time.
I know, dude. I know. But they were like, why are you sad? I'm like, I'm sad. Like, what the fuck? But like, yeah. You know, like people kind of like approach you with anger, right? With mental illness.
Right. Because they're like, okay, well, like you can fix this. I mean, I think that's kind of what I mean.
You can fix this.
As far as like similar, right? Like if I'm sitting here smoking crack instead of going to my, you know, family Christmas party, right? Like they're like, oh, well, you have that choice. Like you can choose to not do that and go to the family Christmas party, as far as like, if it takes me 10 hours to actually like sit, you know, straight up and get vertical in the morning or in the afternoon for that matter, like if it takes me that long, like they're like, well, why don't you just stand up? Like, why don't you just get up? Like, I don't know. Like I said, like it runs in my family, you know, specific, mm-hmm. you know, certain people in my family. So like certain people understand, you know, a lot more than others.
Yes.
You know, as far as like my roommate, right? Like she is like my sister, you know what I mean? We are so close. And she has been nothing but there for me through these, you know, through the, you know, difficult times. But she struggles in the fact of like, I want to fix you. I don't understand what's really happening. I want to help you and I can't. That's kind of, I think, what I mean by like, they're similar, right? Like people might feel a similar way as far as like, you know, using like, I want to fix you. I want to help you, but I can't do anything. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And you just kind of watch that person struggle like really, really bad. And it's affected our relationship a lot, like a lot, you know what I mean? Being my roommate, she sees everything, right? So like she sees me, you know, stay awake, you know, for 2 days and all manic and all over the place. I'm on top of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then she also sees me, you know, super depressed where I can't get out of bed and I can barely function.
Mm-hmm.
Some days I can't function.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, she has also had that kind of like anger piece, you know what I mean, that you were talking about as far as like, mm-hmm. you know, being angry with me. She doesn't fully understand, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's fucked up though, right? Like the compassion and empathy when it comes to like mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know, it's like my dad doesn't believe it's like real.
Oh, my
know?
Dad doesn't.
Oh, I know.
So
yeah,
it's like,
yeah, that's
it's
a whole
just
thing.
Like, dude, go fuck yourself. Like,
well, I think that's actually like that on like the micro level of recovery, it's the people in the rooms. It's mm-hmm. it's the people that are directly affected. Like the macro of it is really getting everybody else on board mm-hmm. to understanding that these are real things. Mm-hmm. Like, because there's even people in the rooms who are like, oh, addiction isn't a mental yeah. illness. I'm like, dude, it's in the DSM. Like, it is 100% a mental.
And you don't have to be addicted just to drugs. Right?
No.
You can be addicted to porn. You can be addicted to like,
literally
anything.
Gaming, yeah. gambling, yeah. shoes, men,
TV?
Women, TV, like creatine, fucking working out.
Yeah,
like,
dude, you got that shake for me, man.
Yeah. Oh, like you gotta get some pre-workout before we go
do pre-workout.
Fucking,
like, yeah. I don't even understand. I need to do a deep dive in that. Like, what the fuck is pre-workout?
I swear to yeah.
Because like I'll see people. Right. I'm like, I took 5 pre-workouts. I'm like, dude, you are fucking like
yeah. You're zooted.
Are you okay?
Dude. You're out of your fucking mind. Like, stop the CrossFit. It's a cult.
It's a cult.
It is. It's okay. And Ben, but we were talking to Ben H about it, and he was like, "Oh yeah, it's totally a cult." He was like, "I am so susceptible to cults." He was like, "I got into the religious one, the addicted one, the workout cult." He was like, "I'm very susceptible to cults."
He's so nice, though. Yeah. You know, he's just like,
I know, he's beautiful. Great. Ben, if you listen to this, I love you so much. I'll have you on back on anytime. But yeah, it's really getting all the other people who don't understand the ins and outs of it. Because, like, and obviously, like, I'm in recovery as well, but, like, something as on a different level of, like, bipolar, I don't understand. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't get it. But so, like, but getting people to a level of compassion and understanding is going to be a very long road.
But it's also, like, for me, accepting the fact that not everybody's going to be like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I can't just, like...
You can't expect it.
Right. Yeah. So, like, you know, expectations are premeditated resentments. So you know what I mean? Like, you know, I sit there, and if I expect somebody to do something or I expect somebody to, like, completely understand where I'm coming from, then and they don't, then, like, I get disappointed and resentful. And, like, that's just wasting my energy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's not... So that's like, but sometimes it is obviously very upsetting or like irritating. You know what I mean? I'm trying. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I say I'm trying and like I really, really am.
Yeah.
But like there's just something. So this is how I describe it. I describe it as a super humongous, thick brick wall right in front of me, right? And like it is in front of everything that I have to do. You know what I mean? I have to bust through that brick wall to even get out of bed in the morning. Mm-hmm. And once I bust through that wall, I'm already exhausted, so I don't want to get out of bed. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it's like...
And then there's the next wall of, oh, I have to go, like, talk to people.
Right. Yeah. Right. And I work in treatment, right? So, like, I have to talk to people. I have to, like, you know, do all that stuff. But it's like somebody with ADHD taking a test and somebody without. You know what I mean? It's just a little bit more difficult for that other person with ADHD to take that test.
Yeah.
But the test still gets done. Like, you still got to do the test. You know what I mean? The test is life,
right? Yeah. And most people, like, they take for granted, like, oh, you just brush your teeth in the morning. And be like, do you know how hard it is to get up and brush my teeth in the fucking morning? Mm-hmm. No.
People don't get that. People
no.
Like, well, it's just a daily thing. Like,
you know. You just do it. No, you just fucking do it.
Right.
All right. I'm going to ask a fun question. Because obviously this is an audio format and people can't see you. Okay. She's all sorts of tatted and pierced and you're decked out for spooky season and it's very great.
Absolutely.
I love it so much. So I'm getting the vibe that you're a hard rock, emo, heavy metal chick.
The vibe is correct.
I mean, me too. How important is that? Like, so for me, like, heavy metal is actually super uplifting.
I love it.
the lyrics and the connectivity of, you know, we're the fringe outsiders that in this music we actually talk about how the darkness.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh my God, I feel connected to these people I've never met. So how, like, heavy metal, hard rock, emo, like, what does it mean to you? And, like, how important is it?
I mean, honestly, like, some people look at me like I'm crazy when I say this, but, like, I'll use it to, like, meditate, right? Like, I'll sit there and, like, listen to a song, whether it's, like, instrumental or not, and I focus in on one instrument. And, like, focus in on that, you know, that one instrument.
Yep.
My mind wanders to a different instrument. I go to a different instrument. Mm-hmm. But I'm just, like, solely focused on that and what's going on and listening to the drums and listening, you know what I mean? Listening to all that. And like, that's been a really big, it's made me feel like a part of something.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Going to like shows, like you can have fun.
Music therapy.
Drugs and alcohol.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You can have fun. Like, you know, going to that type of show. I like all music, right? Like I just went to like an EDM show and that was so much fun. I danced for 4.5 hours straight.
Okay? Nice.
Sober. It was great.
I was manic. It was great.
I wasn't. But like music is, you know, such a huge, like, I'm listening to music constantly. You know what I mean? And there's so many different like vibes, like I can like kind of like jam if I'm sad or I can.
Do you have a sad playlist?
or absolutely.
So do I. Totally. Totes. You have to have a sad playlist.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. I have a workout one and I don't work out. So, mm-hmm.
They're sad. This is what I want to work out.
So, right. You're right. No, but like the metal, like it is like a little community of like people that, mm-hmm. Have struggled with the same shit.
You
know what I mean? And like I listen, like you said, to some of the lyrics, I'm like, oh my God, same.
Yeah.
You know?
And luckily, and we're like, I've been listening to people long enough that like, now they're getting clean too. And I'm like, oh yes. Yeah. Like Corey, thank you. You're clean too now. Like we can, yeah, we're the same. Right. No.
We're the same.
But like, yeah, Korn was smoking meth for a long time. And then like they're all like not smoking meth anymore. And you're like, oh, wow, you guys are actually better. And cool. you're clean now too. Yay. Like we're all the same. But Eric's just totally in the backseat. He's like, you're not a metal guy. And that's cool.
Yeah.
Yep. That's no. Right. Any specific band you want to shout out? Because mine's Slipknot. Slipknot has saved my life.
I like Duality.
I know. Duality is a fantastic song.
I've been listening to a lot of Shrine of Malice.
Okay.
Yeah. It's all like right. really like technically mm-hmm. kind of like lots of, I don't know. It's like, it's interesting. Okay. Like,
all right.
Yeah, I've been listening to a lot of them recently.
All right. I'll give them a listen. I'll give them more. I've heard of them, but I need to give them a listen. All right, Eric, what do you got?
Let's talk about the eating disorder.
Ooh.
So I was definitely a restrictor. And it was, you know,
is that like
anorexia? It's just a
better word. It's a subset of anorexia. Okay.
It's a better word, I guess.
Okay.
But like, you know, first off, like what, you know, was your kind of go-to for like, cause bulimia and like, if you're bulimic or you're anorexic, like those are two different ways of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And then also like, what's your relationship like with food and then also your image? Because I think like the body dysmorphia thing is like has to be an aspect of eating disorders or else you're not going to do it. But like, I can't see myself probably as I am.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yep. So like, how do you view yourself now that you're like recovering from ED?
Well, as we, you know, I kind of talked about before, it's kind of back and forth, right? Like, you know, I would go to treatment for the eating disorder and then the drugs would get bad. And then I would go to treatment for, you know, drugs and then the eating would get bad. So it fluctuates. It's up and down, up and down. And, you know, for me, anorexia, you know, was my diagnosis at, you know, the beginning, like the first, you know, stint at Shepherd Pratt. And then all of a sudden I was like, okay, well now people are watching me eat. Okay. So like, I got to like eat a little bit. And then that's when, you know, I even was purging before then, but that's when the purging got really bad. So then it was kind of more, anorexia nervosa binge purge type.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a little bit of both.
How long did you do it for? Cause I mean, like with purging, you have like the esophagus issues. Oh, with that. Like, I mean, you can do like real damage.
Yeah. I would say consistently, regardless of being in and out of treatment, probably like 5-6 years.
Wow.
And then, you know, then the over-exercising would be a piece. And then, you know, kind of like all of that stuff, right? Like there's so many other like little symptoms as far as that. You know, I went to treatment 6 times for it, like I said. And each time, you know, they do this thing called body tracing. So they'll mark off the top of your head, your shoulders, your fingertips. You know, you stand against a wall on a piece of paper. And
what's this for?
This is the body tracing.
They'll trace your
so,
body.
Okay.
Yeah, so then they'll mark off like where your knees are and where your feet, right? So then you take marker and draw what you think you look like. And then you turn around and they trace your actual body against the paper. And it kind of like is a... It's in your face that, like, this is what your body dysmorphia looks like.
Wow.
So, like, you know, for example, like, it's still a huge thing for me because, you know, I am 60 pounds lighter or heavier than I was when I was in treatment that first time. And I thought I looked the way I look now. You know what I mean? It's just, it's mind fucking. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. That was, it still 100% plays a part. And, like, I kind of get, lost as far as, like, I think like that so much now that, like, I don't even realize when I'm doing it. It's completely subconscious as far as, like, I look in the mirror and I see something completely different than what other people see. And something that's really helped me is something that my cousin's therapist suggested, actually. So I was like, you know, I think I'll try it. Like, why not? I have this little baby picture of me when I was 5 years old in my little preschool graduation outfit. And it's right on my mirror. And when I look at myself in the mirror, I don't do this, you know, every single time, but I try to do it often.
Yeah.
To where, you know, I say something negative or I think something negative about myself. And then I'll look at that picture and be like, okay, well, would you say that to that little girl? You know what I mean? No. Like, that little girl, that little five-year-old girl is still inside of me and I have to take care of her, you know? So,
that's
or it. Sometimes I'll...
That's like hitting me. That's hitting me.
That might be the title right there. That little five-year-old girl.
Oh.
Still inside of me.
Oh.
Or just tell her I love her.
You know? Yeah. Oh, my God.
I wouldn't say half the shit I say.
No.
Myself.
Oh, God. Like, I've never thought of doing that. And, like, I can, like, my I won't do it because Eric will fucking, he will just
There will be tears.
And no. Like, I'm just like, no, I'm not going to cry right now. But my mind is like, you need to cry, dude. Like, that sentence, that's a crier, my friend.
That's a good one, though.
That's such a beautiful exercise that I've never heard anybody do before, and
I like it.
I think more people should. Like, yeah. I probably should. I should probably get a childhood picture and be like, yeah, would I say that to that little boy?
Yeah,
like,
fuck you, little David. Fuck you.
But then my mind is like, oh, because honestly, like, that's part of, like, why I use, because, like, I was really poorly treated as a kid. Like, my shit was fucked up. So, like, that kid needed to hear that shit.
Yeah.
That kid needed to hear that shit. And I'm going to write down call, sponsor, and therapist. Immediately underline. Okay. I'm going to tell a quick, fun story and then ask a question about it. Do you remember the rescue scenario?
I don't know.
Okay, so this was, I can't remember how many years ago, and we were both on Facebook Messenger at, like, 2 in the morning.
Probably when I was working overnight.
I think so. And, like, I don't know, like, I'm talking to you, I'm like, what are you doing up? And you're like, oh, I'm locked out of my car. Do you not remember that?
No, I don't remember that.
Yeah.
I don't remember a lot of stuff.
I actually just recently went through it. So, you hit me up at, like, 2 a.m. in the morning that you were locked out of your keys were locked in your car and you couldn't get into your house or apartment.
Oh, wait, I think I do vaguely remember that.
And I asked if you needed help and you were like, yeah. So,
oh, my God, you did.
So, at 2 in the morning, I drove all the way out to Westminster, which was, like, an hour away. In order to rescue you at, like, 3 in the morning.
I didn't even realize at the time that it was an hour away, or else I 100% would not have asked, you know?
Yeah, I was living here. Like, I was living in Elk Ridge.
It's really that far away?
Yeah, it's, like, 45 minutes. Oh, yeah. Damn. So, yeah, like, then I just... Yeah. That's kind of sad that you don't remember them. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, you remember.
No. And, like, that brings me to, like, the question. Like, that was so cool, like, that I was able to do that.
Yeah.
Building relationships, like, in recovery, like, how important is it to, like, have those relationships for those moments of rescue? Like, when you need somebody to show up, and, like, building those connections to be able to call out and actually get that help.
Those relationships, I think, are the most vital thing in this entire process. You know what I mean? Aside from, in my opinion, you know, working with a higher power, whatever you want to call it, like, you know, learning to have faith and trust and all that stuff, but, like, learning to have faith and trust in other humans. You know what I mean? And I think that, I mean, if it weren't for my network, it doesn't matter if it's, like, in a time of need of, like, my keys are locked in the car, or if it's, like, in a time of need of, you know, I can't get out of bed.
My keys are locked in my soul.
Right. Right. Like, I just think, you know, I can't do this by myself. I can't do it. I've tried and I can't do it alone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think, you know, the most rewarding thing about it is what you literally just said as far as, like, this was so cool. Like, that was cool. I was able to do that. Like, that's how I feel when somebody asks me for help.
Yeah.
I'm, like, excited. You know, most of the time.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, I'm like, okay, like, this is good. Like, I can do that. I can be there for another human being. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I get sober, you know, 3 months into this stint in sobriety, I lost my aunt to cancer. And my uncle was there. They were going through all my stuff, finding a bunch of, you know, paraphernalia, whatever, this last time before treatment. And he is shaking a needle in my face, and he says, "My wife is at home fighting for her life, and you're sitting here throwing yours away." And I didn't process that until I got to treatment. Maybe 2 weeks into it or so, all of a sudden I thought of it, and I just broke down. So the point of me saying all this is that, you know, when she passes away, you know, 3 months later or so, you know, when she passed, I was able to be there.
Yeah.
You know? And, like, that's, like, you know, building the relationships in the rooms is important 100%. But, like, also, you know, taking that, what you learn and what, you know, as far as me, like, what I've gained and what I've learned in this whole process is that, like, I could be there for other people, too, like my family. And, like, you know what I mean? And being able to be there mentally and physically, not just physically. For my, you know, little cousin who was 17 and just lost her mom, or my uncle who just lost his wife of 30 years. Like, you know, you're able to be there for people. So it's cool back and forth, right? Like, you ask people for help, and, like, they'll help you, you know? And then people ask you for help, and you can help them. It's really cool.
Yeah. I'm glad, like, I didn't intend, like, the whole family, like the auxiliary to that, but I'm so glad you took it in that direction, because, yeah, you're 100% right. Great answer. What you got, Eric?
This is my last one.
Oh, last question?
I've had interventions. They suck. How's your last one?
Seriously, how was your last intervention?
Well, my last intervention was kind of what I just described as far as my uncle, because I've had two. And then, you know, it's funny how my thought process shifted, right? It's like, you know, I don't want to be homeless. And then this last time, I'm like, you know, I could totally make it homeless. Like, be totally fine. You know what I mean?
It's
I
just camping, man.
Right. I just want to keep doing what I'm doing.
It's forced camping.
Exactly. But, no, it was, you know, this last one was, you know, I wasn't in the right state of mind, obviously. So, but it was very emotional afterwards. You know what I mean? Because I knew what I was doing. I was a lot more self-aware at that point.
Yeah.
So, you know, after, you know, years in and out, I was very self-aware, and I knew what I was doing, you know? So I think that made it a little more painful. And as far as, you know, also what my uncle said to me, I was like, oh my gosh, like, it just hit me so hard. And I don't know if I ever told him that, but I think sometimes that's the type of thing where your actions say, you know, things louder than what you could ever say
You
know, verbally about that.
All right. So you've had, I'm actually, I want to hear your two cents on this too, Eric, because you're in a similar boat. I don't have this experience, so, like, I'm deferring to both of you guys. How does relapse play on, like, your mental and emotional state? Not just, like, when you relapse and you're in addiction, but then coming back in, like, shame, guilt, what does that look like, and how do you work on that and work through that?
So, for me, coming, when I come back after a relapse, it's like, you know, I'm like, you hear them say, you know, people in AA or NA or whoever say that, like, the relapse starts way before you actually pick up. So, you know, like, my mind, I'm already, regressing, so my mind kind of goes backwards, right? And then, you know, I would pick up. And then for me, the shame and guilt depended a lot on how I came back.
Okay.
So for example, like this last time, like I said, nothing bad happened. I just drank and then came back, right? Because I was like, you know what, fuck, fuck this, like, I'm done. I can't do it anymore. As opposed to like coming back after you know, shooting up for the first time, going to treatment, my uncle, you know, finding that. And then a few months later, my friend, he was a friend, died after that. You know what I mean? After using together and something that I actually do really kind of struggle with a little bit recent, you know, still is like the kind of quote unquote survival's guilt as far as like, well, like, why me? But like, I don't really think I have to, I try not to focus so much on that. Right. Like,
yeah.
But that's also something that has played a part in it. And like how long I was out there, just like kind of like certain things, you know, but I've worked through it as far as like talking about it. Like for me, talking about shit, saying it out loud gives it less power.
Mm-hmm.
So like if it's in my brain and I try to talk to myself about it, like I got myself here.
Okay? That's where the problem begins.
Right.
You know?
I'm not that reliable as far as like, especially when I, you know, first, you know, get back in. But I talk to other people about it. And I talk to them and I process things, even if it's just talking. Like, I don't need your advice. Like, I don't need, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just need to, like, say shit out loud.
Yeah.
And then I also pray out loud. That really helps me.
Nice.
You know, it doesn't, for me, struggled with the higher power thing for a very long time. And, you know, once I kind of came to terms with the fact that, like, I don't have to figure it out and I don't have to know what it is. I just, like, say shit out loud. If it looks like...
Yeah.
You know, I'm talking to myself, like, that's fine. I don't really care.
As long as you think that something is out there and it's not me.
Right. Literally.
Good. Go from there. Start there. Yep.
Exactly. Like, I'm, you know, could have died multiple times.
Yeah.
So there's something that's been protecting me. So, yeah, I don't know. I kind of just, like, rely on, like, my network and the people that I've built relationships with in the program and outside of the program.
Yeah.
To help me work through it.
What about you, Eric? Like,
were you asking me if I feel guilt and shame?
Well, like when you relapse, like when you're fucking using, you're like, oh fuck, I shouldn't be doing it. I know better than this. I've been clean.
Nope, not for me.
you're just like, fuck this.
Not
I'm
my
using.
Story. Yeah. No. Yeah. Like, maybe the first time when I relapsed in Chicago, I might have had like a little bit of like reluctance to it. Which I kind of, you know, was like, okay.
Yeah.
After a little while, but that the next relapse was just...
So the addiction just sort of just flips the script that quick.
Yeah, for me. Yeah. And I haven't gone right back to shooting dope, right? So,
yeah.
Like, that's a weird dynamic when you're not, you know, kind of speedballing every day.
Yeah.
And you're, like, drinking or you're doing some pills or, like, you know, oh, I'm going to trip this weekend or something. And, like, it's... And, like, I don't know... I hate to make it sound like this because it does sound douchey. The stakes are different, right? Like from like when I was 24 or like when I was 29 and like I totaled 3 cars in like a couple days. Like, they're just different. So,
yeah.
And I don't, I guess one thing, thankfully I'm not Catholic. I don't have that shame and guilt.
You'd have, like, been a terrible Catholic.
I would have sucked.
You would have made a terrible Catholic.
But, like, I've noticed that with people, though, like, who are Catholic, like, they have that shame and guilt, like, built into them.
Mm-hmm.
And you know me, I'll say fucking anything. I don't care.
That's true.
So, like, yeah, I used.
That's why I think that's why
we fucking apologize for it. I'm a drug addict. Like, you know.
I think for me, I feel similar, but I think the guilt and shame comes from, like, what I do to the people around me. You know what I mean? Like, for some reason.
That's
like
fair.
Like, sometimes I'm like, you know, I don't care that I used. Well, I know I can just think back to one time, at least, that I felt like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just the people, you know, around me. I was tired of hurting people.
I haven't hurt people in the same way, I guess.
Really? I didn't... I genuinely...
Those relapses that I did when I was 24. Because, like, when I was younger, like, yeah, that was, like, real... Like, you're going to be homeless and blah, 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 and all that shit. But, I mean, you remember when I came back from Chicago.
Yeah.
I mean, I looked great.
I guess.
I don't know. I remember, I think it was Kyle. He was like, you're like the only asshole I've ever seen come off a relapse and looks better.
Yeah.
And I was like, yes.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, you're
failing upwards, right?
You have failed upwards consistently, and it is a marvel to me. But like when you came back in, like
I don't like picking up key tags. Yeah, there's shame and guilt there.
Right? Okay,
of course.
So you're just like, because dude, I saw you like pick up like 90, and like you like get up, like you're just like dragging your body across.
Just like this you're is just, so fucking okay, stupid.
Okay,
just not, crushes just, your
give me,
ego.
Give me, yeah. Is that it? Was it like an?
Do you remember? Okay, so last time
or humility?
Time I was in fellowship recovery.
Mm-hmm.
We were in the same home group. I didn't pick up any key tags.
No, I know you
I
didn't.
I picked them all up after the meeting. I was like, "Hey, can I get that? Give me that year."
Yeah.
It's like, are you still? No, give me the year. We've had 3 years. We don't need to do it again.
Yeah. I get it.
I mean, yeah, man. I've had what? I've celebrated a year 3 times. I've celebrated 2 twice. And I think 3 once.
There you go. Like, look at this. Oh, look at this.
Similar.
All right. I think I have one more question.
Good
yes. which one? I have 2 different. Yeah, I'm going to go with this. Okay. So you talked about. And actually, you're gonna get 2 cents in on this as well. So this is not of. It's not gonna be worded perfectly. Anyway, therapy versus recovery, not a versus thing. Okay. It's not one against the other. Right. That's not what I'm saying. But like, what do you get from recovery that you don't necessarily get from therapy, and what do you get from therapy that you don't necessarily get from recovery that both complement each other for a life recovery?
Well, for me, what recovery and like, you know, being an AA and all that stuff, what that does for me is it gives me the opportunity to give back to somebody else.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like that brand new person comes in. Because I get a lot. Obviously, I get stuff from both, you know, therapy and
yes, exactly. And but they're two separate and different things. Yep.
Right. So, like, you know, and the recovery is just tailored more towards you know, my disease, my addiction, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then the recovery, therapy is tailored more towards... you know, my bipolar and the eating disorder and the other underlying things. And like, they kind of work together.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know what I mean? As far as like, sometimes like my therapist will say something that, you know, I've heard in an AA meeting and then I'm like, oh shit. Like, you know what I mean? So it kind of like I can apply certain things to either one, like, you know, interchangeably.
Yeah.
But AA and being, you know, going to meetings and kind of like doing that whole thing, like, gives me the chance to like see a new person who has 5 days, right, and a new girl, and she's just scared shitless.
Yeah.
She has no idea what's going on. Like, it gives me the opportunity to like give back as far as like introducing myself and be like, hey, how are you? Do you want a cup of coffee? Like, you know what I mean? Like, stuff like that. Whereas like therapy is more tailored just to me. I feel like, you know, yeah, like I'm in a program, you know, for recovery in like selfishly, like I'm there because like I want to save my life.
Yes.
Like, I want to try to, you know, but it's not as selfish, quote unquote, as in my opinion, therapy. So like, you know, I go there, I pay the person,
yeah,
you know what I mean? And like, yes, they have a lot of knowledge, book knowledge. And what I don't like, or what's very different for me about therapy is that the therapist can't share their experience. You know what I mean? It's the unprofessionalism as far as, you know, that, like, it's a more professional setting, and
yeah,
I just talk about me and what's going on and all that stuff, but they can't relate. If they do, they can't say, hey,
yeah,
yeah, like, I relate to that, blah, blah, blah. That's what I really like about AA, because, you know, I could tell my sponsor, like, you know, something, you know, super stupid, crazy I did, right? You know, went to work drunk, you know, at a treatment center, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know, just, like, dumb stuff, and then drove to Pittsburgh for some reason.
Spar.
And, yeah. That was a bad time. You know, or I could tell her something stupid. She'd be like, oh my gosh, same. You know what I mean? Like, me too. Or like, oh, I don't have experience with that, but I know who you can talk to.
Yeah.
So I think it's just like the professionalism and as far as like helping other people and being able to receive other people's experience.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like,
differs. That was actually the one drug counselor I ever listened to. was actually a drug counselor who was also in recovery.
Right.
Because every other drug counselor I had, like, with all my shit through, like, my teenage years, I would literally ask them, I'd be like, do you do drugs? And they're like, no, I don't do drugs. And I was like, then you don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Right.
I was like, you can have all the degrees you fucking want, but you do not know what I'm thinking, what I'm going through, what I'm feeling. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking to you. Right. And then the connection was severed and I had nothing to, I'm like, I'm going to show up to these classes and do what I have to do to get off probation. And then we're going to part ways.
Right.
Like, but that last counselor I had, he was like, yeah, I'm an addict. Yeah, and he was like, I did cocaine for fucking years. What do you want to talk about? And I'm like,
I did fucking too.
Me too.
Me too, buddy. I still fucking email that guy 10 years later. Like,
that's awesome.
Yeah, because I was like, this guy fucking gets it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm in.
Yeah.
All right, Eric, what about you? Therapy and, you know.
So luckily my therapist is in recovery.
There you go. So, you know, nice. There it is.
She's, like, and actually she was my therapist like 10 years ago and I just started seeing her again this year. And, she's great. So like, I mean, we don't have that issue, right? Of like, the professionalism. Because if we did, I wouldn't see her actually.
Yeah.
I need it to be kind of like genuine and, you know, cause if it's not, it doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
But therapy is the place where I kind of work on the core issues, I think. Because, I don't know, you know, like, when you're in, it's like, all your problems are because of drugs. It's like, maybe, but, like, more than likely, it's from all, like, the trauma and bullshit like, I grew up with that, like, leaded me to do drugs. Let's kind of, like, focus on that.
Yeah.
But, you know, not everyone has that, so I get why, like, it's the drugs, right? And fellowship recovery, would like, you know my feelings about fellowship recovery. So, I mean, I have not been in a fellowship recovery for a while. And I get my recovery elsewhere now. But I think it's important, like, those first couple years I came around, like, they're so impactful and important to my life.
Oh, yeah.
And I still use, like, the steps, like, from that time and the second time, but I don't know. It's hard for me, right? I don't like people, so that makes things difficult.
The hilarious part is the people you do like, you love them very much.
Yeah. But it's...
Your queue is just full. You're like, I don't need new people.
No, I don't need new people, dude.
I'm good. I have my five.
I'm good. But, like, yeah, I mean, I had to go back to therapy, right? Because there's nowhere else I can talk about this shit. I can't talk about it with, like, my people because my people don't quite understand it. And they might have a bias towards this or that, right? So it's an like, it's someone who isn't actually in my life but understands my life.
Gotcha.
Where if I talk to my, you know, sponsor or something, like, or talking to, like...
They have a vested interest.
Yeah, well, like, or, like, think about, like... And I hate to, like, say stuff like this, and my sponsor wasn't like this, but some sponsors are like this, like, where it gets around, right? Like, when I say something to, like, my therapist, it's staying with my therapist.
Right.
That's true.
Like,
And that's the good part of the professionalism.
Right, exactly.
HIPAA!
So, yeah, there's some compliance in there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, man, I like this, like, you know, this sort of stuff for recovery.
I love this.
Like, doing kind of, like, focusing on my physical health and getting all, like, my different, like, physical issues, like, taken care of, as well as the mental, right?
Yep.
Like, I have a lot of different disorders, but...
No, you are literally just a ball of disorders.
I know. But we'll have to split my... I think we'll have to split my podcast into a few different ones, actually.
Oh, yeah. Like let's like talk about physical, let's talk about the brain, and then let's talk about the stomach and the guts, and
physical,
then we'll talk about
mental,
everything else.
Spiritual. I think it has to be broken up into three.
Yeah.
But, yeah, dude, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to, like...
That's good. You're an all-encompassing problem.
Yeah, I am. All-encompassing problem. That should be the name of my podcast.
That should be the name of your podcast. You're an all-encompassing problem.
Yeah. But, I mean, they're both important, right?
Absolutely, like, yeah. Yeah, anybody who's listening, they're complimenting. Like, you don't... I believe people should, you know, look at both.
Try both.
Most people in like 12-step fellowship or smart recovery, celebrate recovery, whatever kind of addiction fellowship, probably would benefit from some sort of therapy.
Yes. Like, weird fuckers though who just did drugs. They exist.
I know. Yeah, okay. there are some
wait,
people.
You just did drugs?
There wasn't some problem? There were 6 years where I just really liked coke, dude. Like, I mean, it was the fucking 80s.
And you didn't have both your legs broken?
It was the 80s.
Given oxys, like, you know, for a year? Like, yeah. You just started drinking?
Dude, generationally, it's as I've gotten further into recovery and, like,
Are you talking about old timers?
We get older and wiser. Well, it's very different. Like,
their life 60s is so
addiction
weird.
And 70s and 80s addiction is not 90s and 2000s and 2001. It is entirely different. Like, the crack generation is entirely different from, like, the Purdue, Oxy, Xanax, Ritalin, Everett. Like, we're very much the farthest, the pharmaceutical and the club drugs and all this shit. And then we're talking to a kid he's 24 right before the...
Well, they're the real benzo. Like, those
kids, they're the benzo. It's just very much a pharmaceutical thing. Right. Like, I was sort of trying to, like, go back to, like, the... a little bit of everything. I mean, I was a garbage head, but I was like, cocaine's dope. Like, this shit's awesome. And, like, we got pills now, too? Fine, dump it in.
Cocaine.
Like, can I still drink on this? Cool. Like, dump that in, and like, I'm still smoking weed. I'm cool. Like,
was popular when we were kids, though. Like, during that 18 to, like, 20, like...
I don't hear a lot of coke stories anymore. It's not so much a thing right now.
It was a big thing crack. When we were young.
Yeah.
They skip that part, and it's just, like, straight to crack.
I was such a piece of shit that, like, because I would smoke cocaine, but I wouldn't smoke crack. I looked down my nose at motherfuckers who smoked crack. I was like, "Oh,
I'm just gonna go smoke this coke.
I'm gonna fucking freebase some cocaine that I fucking I titrated and purified myself. You fucking turd. You fucking peasant crackhead.
Hey, dude, you want me to you want me to go cook that back for you?
Like, absolutely not. No, I got all the fucking baby laxative out of my cocaine for a fucking reason. Like, I figured out how to. Like, thank you, Google, for giving me pure cocaine. Nobody look that up. It's terrible. Don't do that.
It's the internet.
You know? It's the internet. The internet and drugs don't mix. It's like drunks and texting. Don't do it.
The internet and a lot of things don't mix.
Just, you know what? Everybody stay off the internet. It's terrible. Let's all pause button.
I'm on the internet right now.
Are you looking at anything good?
I'm just.
Are you on Reddit After Dark now?
I'm just looking at the Ravens. I love Reddit After Dark.
So do I.
I love that sub.
Dude, Reddit is making such a comeback, and I love it. I love it because everybody forgot about it for a while, and now that fucking Twitter has turned to X and taken a turd on the world.
I don't know.
If you haven't started, don't. No, I'm not going to add that.
It's like an old school forum, kind of. I mean,
it is, and it is the Wild West, and it is amazing.
I just like that. Like, it's like, oh, here's pictures of cats. Here's hardcore porn.
Here's hardcore porn. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. And you're like, do you want some dank memes? Yeah, here's some. And this guy's getting shot in the face. Why?
What?
Dude, Reddit is so awesome. So awesome. God, I'm dark. All right. Anything else, Eric, add? No.
Yeah.
Fantastic. You want to add anything?
No, just thank you so much for asking me to come here.
All right.
Do this. I had a really good time.
I appreciate it. And we would like to thank our guest, Val, for joining us today. And one last quick minute. Talk to anybody out there who's struggling, needs to hear your message of hope. What do you have to say directly to them?
That it is that it's possible not to live the way that, you know, you're living.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's okay to reach out for help. And not be so hard on yourself. We're not unique.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people understand where we're coming from more than we think they do. You know?
Yeah.
So, take care of your 5-year-old little self.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely do that. All right. Well, here at Podcast Recovery, we are aiming to expand the scope of support for recovering addicts. Accessibility and convenience of helpful services is paramount to combating addiction. We work to bring the message of recovery to every addict wherever and whenever it is needed. We believe that a powerful voice of recovery should be obtainable, practical, and at the touch of a button. Every addict deserves to hear a message of hope, and Podcast Recovery is here to provide it. All right, everybody, thanks for joining us once again. Please go to all our social media outlets, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, for more information about us, podcastrecovery.com. Like, share, subscribe. Please help us keep the mics on because we are self-supporting, so join our Patreon. Yeah, and I think that's about it. But most importantly, Eric, if you'll help me out.
Everybody, stay safe and stay clean.